Midgard, where you're located now. I'm one of the owners of Midgard, and I run this place with my husband, my mother-in-law, and my two friends, Stefnir and Stefan. And I actually have notes with me, just so I don't forget anything, because this is my second time this lecture, so we'll see how this goes. And just to let you know, I'm just like passionate for nature, and I'm just a nature lover. I'm not a scientist, so if you ask me really complicated questions, then I'll try to look it up for you. So just to tell you a brief history of Midgard. So my cousin, Siggi Bjarni, he founded Midgard in 2010. Then he was 23 years old, and it was just a week before the eruption Eyjafjallajökull. Eyjafjallajökull is the glacier that we can see outside the window here, and that was the glacier that erupted in 2010 and stopped all the air traffic. So he just started the company like a week before the eruption, and he was pretty scared when it started because we thought we wouldn't get any people to Iceland to visit. But it was the opposite, actually. And he was really busy that summer with first just scientists and journalists and people that were checking out the eruption. And my husband, he joined him quite soon after and started running the company with him. And Iceland was just blooming with tourism after the eruption in Eyjafjallajökull. So we thank the glacier for putting us on the map. And then soon after that, then my friend Stefnir joined the team. So until 2013, they were three running the company. And then the summer of 2013, me and my mother-in-law, we started as summer employees. And obviously, you always want to work with your mom and your wife all the time. So we stayed. Dream come true for my husband. And then my friend Stefan, which you saw earlier, he came in 2015. And at that time, we had actually bought this. Now this is the new part of the building, but we bought the concrete factory. It used to be, it was a garage, empty garage, this house. And it was a concrete factory that owned the house originally. And then this house had been empty for a long time when we bought the house. And we decided to change this house and make this like a, now today it's like a hostel and like accommodation and a restaurant and a gathering place for the local community here. And we also have tour operation and do all kinds of tours as well. And as you can see, we're trying to link this two companies together, so it's old tires from our super jeeps that we use for tables. But I would say like sustainability is really important to our company, and this was a big step in our becoming more sustainable, to use the old building, we're renovating it, old empty building, and we're really proud of what we made of the house and that we were able to use this old empty house for this. But you can see when you drive here that we are just in the garage neighborhood. It's not like we don't have any houses around. But we have the best neighbors. We have the horses. Yes. Yeah. So we are all nature lovers, and that's why we ended up here in the middle of nowhere, showing people around the country. And we're really passionate about the nature, and that's why probably I also ended up here telling you these stories and the lecture that we're going to do today. I'm going to take my notes now, just so I don't forget anything that I'm going to say, and then I'll bring them back down. Yeah, nature is not only important to us because we're a tourist company, it's just also because we love spending time outside of nature as well. And nature is, of course, not only important to the tourist sector either. I mean, the tourist sector is, of course, very interlinked with the three pillars of sustainability: economics, environment, and social. And also, the second biggest sector, the fisheries, and also the energy sectors, it's all very, very reliant on the natural resources that we have here. And that's why it is vital for us to keep our businesses sustainable. And it's vital for every business, of course. And people, they come to Iceland because of the nature. They don't come here for city tours, you know. They come here because of the glaciers and the waterfalls and the remote highlands. And I always say that one of the best things to be in Iceland is that you can walk. In my case, actually, because I live here, I need to walk 5 minutes, and then I can be completely alone in nature. And I think that's quite fascinating, and that's what I like. So that's why I think it's really important for us to protect the nature that we have here, that we build our business around. And climate change has, of course, a huge impact on all of our lives. And I know she already mentioned that we all believe in climate change. We all believe that the climate is changing. We can't debate on like how it occurs or like why the climate is changing, but we want the nature to have the benefit of the doubt. We want to do something to try to fix it. We can of course not fix it, but we're trying to do something to make it a little bit less. So climate change is a long-term change in average weather patterns, both globally and locally. And the climate has been getting warmer in Iceland in the last century, and especially since 1918. In accordance with that, the rain has increased as well. And warmer climate does not mean that we will all have Florida weather and be happy all the time here in Iceland. It's just going to be more drastic weather, so it's going to be more rain. And it might affect the Gulf Stream, which is not good for us, because we're very reliant on the Gulf Stream. The Gulf Stream is a warm ocean current that comes from the Caribbean all the way up to Iceland. And all the climate in Europe is dependent on the Gulf Stream. With the Gulf Stream comes warm wind, which fights the cold climate and coming from the north. And the climate in Iceland is mild, and we have mild summers and mild winters due to the Gulf Stream. And if we wouldn't have the Gulf Stream, Iceland wouldn't be a really nice place to live. So we are really dependent on the Gulf Stream. Obviously, these drastic changes to the climate will also impact the biodiversity, like if we would not have this Gulf Stream to keep the weather nice here. And these huge changes in the climate since the Industrial Revolutions are traced to enormous burning of fossil fuels, and the CO2 in the atmosphere has increased dramatically. And now the ocean is also trying to absorb the CO2 from the atmosphere, which makes the ocean acidificated. This word is really difficult for me. The ocean acidification is something that is quite serious for Iceland as well, because that can impact also the species around Iceland. And we do see changes in the, for example, the North Atlantic salmon has been decreasing around Iceland. So we already see changes in the species, but we have also new species around Iceland. So there is changes there that we can see because of the change of the climate. But all of these impacts on the climate change, like weather changes, biodiversity loss, is something that we don't realize in our everyday life. I'm not walking down the streets and thinking about the biodiversity loss every day, you know, because I don't realize it, maybe not right away. But glaciers, they are retreating in Iceland, and that's something that we that live here, we realize that in our everyday life. We use the glaciers a lot, both just for fun. We just like to travel around the glaciers. We like ski touring. We like going up on the super jeeps up to the glaciers, and we do ice climbing. We just use it a lot for ourselves. But then, of course, we also use it a lot for our business as well. But I would say, even though the glaciers are very vital for the business in Iceland as well, because people come here to visit the glaciers, it's also really like vital for us personally, because we use it so much both for fun. And I also think the glaciers have almost impacts on the personality of Icelanders, especially us that live so close to the glaciers. And I was driving with my son the other day, and he said, like, Mommy, I'm so sad about Eyjafjallajökull. We really need to care and take care of Eyjafjallajökull. We can't lose him. You know, my kids, they also think like this. This is something that is just in our mind, because we are watching the glacier every day, and we see them retreat, and we just, it is so sad to think about it that we might not have any glaciers in the year 2200. We might not have any glaciers in Iceland. That's what the scientists say. And I, for example, I designed my house even around Eyjafjallajökull, the glacier. My living room window is like the big line of windows, so I can see the glaciers every day outside of my living room window. So, and I was also, when I was a kid, I was also afraid of the glacier retreating. So, I mean, this is something that we just grew up with knowing. Mm-hmm. And of course, the glaciers, the melting of the glaciers will also have enormous impact on the world's climate. It's not only locally that it will impact. It will have impacts on the sea level and the ocean and the air current, the ecosystems of both humans and all the other species. And it can also impact the volcano activity. And then it's also, like, white surface does reflect the sun's energy back to space, and dark surface does the opposite. So as soon as we lose all this white surface, it will speed up the climate change as well. So that's what we are also afraid of. So this part of my lecture was quite dramatic, but I just wanted to show you a little bit like what, how we think about the glaciers and why we are so interested in the glaciers and sad about them retreating. But I wanted to show you also to have it a little bit more visual. This here is Esjufjöll. And today we hike, this is in Vatnajökull. Vatnajökull is the biggest glacier of Iceland. And today we hike like a 1 day hike over the glacier to get to Esjufjöll. This is a beautiful place. But they say that the first person is born to sail on a boat to get to Esjufjöll. And you can see the lagoon here, so they would sail to get to Esjufjöll. So this is a long distance that is going to be melted in the next couple of years. And it's not so like far away anymore. Yeah. So this is Sólheimajökull. I just wanted you, because this is the glacier that we use the most here for like glacier activities on our tours. This is the glacier that we use for ice climbing and ice walking. And I just want to show you, this is a video that shows the retreat of the glacier from 2007 to 2010. And it ends... So this is how far it has retreated in these 3 years. So it happens really fast. And I feel like I can see almost difference between months.
Mm. I just wanted to add, you know, I told you about the parking lot being right next to the glacier.
Yeah.
This is the one I was talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, because yeah. I told them when I was young, you know, it was just right by the glacier.
Exactly.
And people asked, why is it so far away? This is the reason.
Exactly. And we have all kinds of stories, like, yeah, it ends up at the same place. We have all kinds of stories, like, with the, you know, people used the sheep, like the farmers, they used to gather the sheep and they kept the sheep, like they often were here, and then they just walked over the glacier. Now this is all becoming more difficult because the glacier isn't there anymore to walk. Like, this is, these impacts have impacts on our everyday life. That's why we realize this so easily, you know, we just see this. Sorry, I'm not going to show you this again. I wanted to show you then...
How do you say the name of that again?
Sólheimajökull. I know, we tend to have all the names of everything very long and difficult to pronounce.
I know.
I think it's some kind of a game. I wanted to show you this video as well. This is... One second. So, just to introduce a little bit this video, we have a group from the States that in 2011, when they were kids who came here for a called Under 30 CEOs tour to Iceland, and there was one girl that came on the tour and just like right after they started the company, and she is running a company in the States they called Green Program. It's a university students that are studying about renewable energy, and since 2011 she has been taking her groups here to Iceland, like 10 groups a year approximately. And after we got these tours, we managed to become like a proper company that was running like tours both in the winter and the summertime. So we are really happy that the Green Program picked us to operate for them. So just because this winter, of course, we had COVID and we couldn't do the tours with them, so we did like a virtual ice walk. And I'm just going to show you a part of the virtual ice walk because I think it's kind of interesting to see some part of it, not all of it, but...
So, Sólheimajökull, the sun-ruled glacier, is the southernmost glacier in Iceland. And it is an outland glacier that drops down from the main ice cap of Mýrdalsjökull. Sólheimajökull is about 11 kilometers long and about 1 to 2 kilometers wide. It starts from the rim of the volcano Katla. The glacier is located underneath the ice cap of Mýrdalsjökull. Sólheimajökull covers up to 44 square kilometers, and the average thickness of the glacier is believed to be around 200 meters in thickness.
Wow.
Right, guys, now we're at the base of Sólheimajökull.
This is my husband. And I wanted to show you this part as well.
Crick is the perfect place to see how climate change has affected the environment for the last decades. Here you can see a lagoon, or a glacial lagoon, in front of the glacier that started to form in the year of 2007. The lagoon is around 70 meters deep by the glacier edges, and if the melting will continue, like it has been for the last decades, it will be around 4.5 kilometers long lake in the valley where the glacier is now. As I said, Sólheimajökull is retreating, but from 1930 to 1969, the glacier retreated in total around 1 kilometer. Then the weather cooled and the glacier advanced forward for about 500 meters and or until 1995, and also thickened up by 100 meters. After that, the glacier started to retreat again, and in 2010, it was almost 1 kilometer further up the valley than it was in 1930, and it was 120 up to 150 meters thinner than in 1960.
Yeah.
Sólheimajökull retreated by 1 kilometer from the year 2000 until 2015. The years 2017 to 2018, the glacier retreated 100 meters. If the climate continues to warm, there's a possibility that the glaciers will virtually disappear in 100 to 200 years.
And also to have it a little bit uplifting, then I have a video of my son here as well. Hmm. And just to show you that we do also really like using the glaciers for fun.
A special day for me and this little guy over here. So this is my son, Christian. I decided to take him along and join the expedition up here. So this is Christian's first day on the glacier, and I'm gonna demonstrate and tell him and introduce him to the duck walk. So first off, we walk like straight down, point our feet like directly down, and then we do squat a lot, bend our knees, and then we're gonna walk like so. Perfect.
I think we call it the James Dean walk.
Heck yeah, woohoo!
And this was just like a little extra.
And then you can move over to the side walking if you want. We'll be standing at this amazing spot that this glacier is, and imagining that soon, even several years, this place will just be gone. Let me explain to you how climate change is affecting Iceland at the moment and how it will affect it in the future.
Some 11% of Iceland is covered by glaciers. Iceland ice caps are the largest in Europe outside Greenland. The glaciers contain 3,600 cubic kilometers of water, equivalent to 35 thick ice layer spread evenly over the whole country, and if melted, it will raise the global sea level by 1 centimeter. This is Iceland's greatest water storage, corresponding to the precipitation up to 20 years. Iceland glaciers have shrunk by 2,000 square kilometers since the end of the 19th century, when they were the maximum size since the settlement of Iceland in the 9th century. With the melt rate speeding up, Iceland could lose 30% of its glacial mass by 2050. It's among the highest losses on Earth.
I'm going to show you a little bit the difference between the ice.
Yeah, I think that's good for now. You're welcome to come on a virtual ice walk with us if you like. Yeah, so do you have any questions?
I do.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the difference between a glacier that's formed on land, like permafrost, creates permafrost, and one that is created from a river? Do you know? And evidently there's different biochemical things that happen. And that went, you know, to the melt. Do you know anything about that? I guess I'm concerned about the lagoons and how that affects.
How it affects, you mean, how the lagoon affects the glacier?
How the glacier affects the lagoon when...
Depending on what the glacier's made of.
Yeah, and how, when it melts, how the different salinity and lots of different qualities can affect the lagoons. Do you know anything about that? And how it's affected lagoons here?
No, not really. Do you know the answer to that?
Glacier water here, I haven't heard about it being, you know, contaminated or mixed in with a lot of other materials. But I'm sure, you know, something from the climate itself will have affected it. But there's much less pollution here in, you know, any regard. So the precipitation here would be less polluted than in many other places. So you could even drink. I mean, if you didn't have all the sediments in the glacier water, you can even drink it.
Yeah.
So I guess this. I haven't had that question before either. Maybe because our water is so pure, and that means the snow is pure and the rain is pure. So maybe it's different here. But we'll look into it. You know, see if I find that. So basically, the water has not. You know, melting water has not contaminated anything. It's just more water.
Yeah.
But there are all kinds of. They find bacteria and such in it,
And we do actually drink the glacier water if we have to. We just prefer not to because it's full of sediment and
it's
not really tasty.
No, I guess just sitting when you know as it comes down from the Alaskan and Arctic side, you know, there's studying differences that occur you know, as far down as San Diego and further south with how it affects our lagoons.
Well, in Iceland also, has relatively little air pollution, which probably helps this as well with the glacier, like because, and that's affected also because we have so strong winds here, so the air pollution is not that much in Iceland.
Do you have permafrost here?
With the land is just like frozen solid.
Yeah, we do have that.
And then it melts off in the summer.
Yeah, we do have that. And I also didn't mention earlier, but we, of course, there are all kinds of things that we're trying to do here to fix a little bit what we, like, to reverse a little bit the climate changes. We cannot do everything, but we can do something. And it's, for example, to make sure that the soil is really good to regenerate and to collect CO2. So that's a good solution is to work on the soil to be more better, and also with like the wetlands in Iceland. I don't know if you heard about that, but the wetlands in Iceland, they store a lot of CO2, so we're trying to regenerate the wetlands, like try to
wetlands.
Because in 1940 something
then they
dried up a lot of the wetlands in Iceland because of the farming industry and agriculture.
The ditches I pointed out to you.
Yeah. But they're mapping down now, like areas, because the south coast is a big farmland in the south coast. But like, for example, the west and the north of Iceland, the head of Iceland and the north of Iceland, it's not as much agriculture. They don't need the farmland there anymore that they dried up, and they did go overboard with drying up all the wetlands at the time. So now they're trying to restore the wetlands, because the wetlands is a big, it's really, really important to the climate change policy in Iceland the wetland restores so much CO2 from the atmosphere, and it's restoring so much CO2. So we're trying to do, that's something that we can do quite easily in that sense, to try to reverse a little bit the circle.
That's great. So is part of that the planting of trees?
Planting of trees is another thing as well, because we do also, and for example, a lot of companies, you can sponsor Kolviðr, which is the company that is planting the trees to equalize the CO2 of your travel. You can do like, you can sponsor Kolviðr, which is like a planting of trees, or you can sponsor like Votlendissjóður, the wetland fund, which is restoring the wetlands. But the wetland is a faster solution. The trees is also a good solution, but Iceland's climate is, it's difficult to plant trees here, so it's more of a long-term effect.
Yes, absolutely. We are planting a tree. you are something a tree.
Yes.
Today?
No, not today. No, we